Saturday Night Live, Friday Night Speaker Meeting, held at Episode Shopping Center, Room 120, in San Jose, California, on August 7th, 1992. Tonight's 10-minute speaker is Billy O, and the main speaker is Pablo G. The original recording and its copy are at the SNL Tape Library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes, and please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any AA member at the public level. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Billy and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to welcome the newcomers and all the court people. And if it's your first time here, just listen and maybe something will be said tonight that might change your mind about drinking. I've only got, like I said, you said 10 minutes to speak, and I don't know, I've never spoken 10 minutes in my life. I can tell you that there's two things that's real important for anybody, I think, to try to make it in this program, and that is to get a higher power to believe in, and whatever higher power you choose to decide, you need to get one. And also you need to get with the program, and that means get a sponsor and start working the steps. For me, I know because I tried for lots of years to try to make myself the successful user or successful drinker. You know, I drank since I was 16 years old on a regular basis, and I shot heroin since I was 18 years old up until 1985, I think, was the last time. And that was on a regular basis, except for when I went to jail and all that other stuff. I tried numerous attempts at going into recovery because I knew I had a problem with drugs. Because it was plain, you know, I was sticking needles in my arm, so definitely there wasn't something right there. The drinking was the last thing for me to sit there and finally surrender to admit that I had a problem. See, my mother was an alcoholic. When my dad was killed, my mom started drinking real heavy, and she remarried like three or four times after my dad was killed. And every one of my stepfathers was an alcoholic, and they were abusive. And I remember some of the fights, you know, chasing my mom around the house with a knife and stuff like that, bloody messes, you know, from him, one of them beating the heck out of her and shit. And I remember saying to myself, you know, I'm not going to grow up to be an alcoholic. I'm not going to be that. But yet I did. For me, you know, like I said, I tried numerous attempts. I used the Veterans Administration up in Palo Alto or Menlo Park until so many times until they finally told me no more, you know, and that was like a slap in the face. The last time that I was on a good roll, I had 18 months without taking anything, you know, and I was going to meetings and I thought I was on top of the world. And I remember somebody who I had a lot of respect for, had like 15 years in this program, set up at the podium, if you want to stay sober, get involved in your sobriety, get involved in service. So I put in for a secretary of a meeting and I got it, and I was on top of the world. But see, I did not get a sponsor, I did not work no steps. I was going to one AA meeting a week and one of another fellowship to kind of combine my dual addiction. And what happened was that after 18 months, my mind finally snapped and I went out and drank. From that time, I finally said, okay, that's all I'm going to do, you know, drink, because I'll be all right. I can handle it. I don't have a problem drinking. And so for the next 8 months, all I did was drink. And what it did, you know, see, what happened is how I drank is I went over to Santa Cruz, and it was a nice hot day, and went to Positively Front Street to go get some steam clans and French bread, you know, and I got a root beer. And my buddy across the table, my old-time friend, he sat there and had everything I did except that he had a Budweiser. And I just seen that little beads of water rolling down off the can. And I go, you know, I can drink a beer. You know, beer's never been a problem for me. And what I denied there was the fact that all the wrecks that I'd been into drinking, all the fights I'd been into, fall off my motorcycle at 65 miles an hour drunk, walking off of cliffs over in Santa Cruz drunk, all this stuff I denied and forgot all about. I picked up that beer and I drank that beer in the bar, or in Positively Front Street, And then I went down to the beach and I had one more beer. And I remember saying to myself on the way back, you know, hey, I can control this. You know, this is not affecting me at all. It's affecting my speech. But what happened is that, so, you know, I'm going to work and all this other stuff. And after work, I'd stop off and have one beer with the guys after work and then go home. And what happened in the next 8 months is that my progression, the disease grabbed me so much, was I would go to work, I'd go and sit there and drink about a case of beer with the guys after work, then go to the bar on the way home. And what it turned into is that I wasn't going home. I'd stay at the bar until closing time and then go back and park myself in front of the yard so I'd at least make it to work the next day. What finally, the bottom that I hit is that I was about ready to ruin the relationship that I was in. I was about ready to lose my job. Everything that 18 months that I'd built back up, you know. I got up one morning after a hellacious hangover and not going to work the day before. And I called in to work and told them I wasn't going to come in. And for the first time, I sat there and talked to my dispatch. And I said, you know, I think I got a drinking problem and I'm going to see about getting into the VA hospital. And she told me that my insurance, I mean, Teamsters, and they said, you know, she said that I'd be covered. So I called up the VA hospital, and that was when the guy told me that I'd wore out my welcome there. I'd been to detox probably 25 times. I'd been into programs from 30 days to 13 months was the longest I stayed in a program there. And I'd been in 5 long-term programs. And not once did I ever get any kind of a message, you know, until the last time when I went to a meeting here at the old Saturday Night Live. So what happened is that when the guy told me that I wasn't welcome there no more, he said I could go to Martinez or I could go up to San Francisco. What I did is I called up and my insurance said that they would cover me for a 28-day program, so I checked myself into San Jose Hospital, into the care unit. And what happened there was that I surrendered. I did a complete, fully surrender. And when they assigned me a room, I went into that room, and I got down on my knees. There was nobody else in the room, and I prayed to this God that I'd abandoned when I was 12 years old. You know, my dad was killed when I was 12, and up to that point, I was going to Catholic school and all that other stuff. And when my dad was killed, that was it. And what I did is I said, hey, God, you know, I'm really serious. You know, I can't make it on my own. You know, help me. You know, help me make it this time because I ain't going to make it. I ain't going to last another time out there. So what I did is I started getting into the program. I started doing the 12 steps. I got a sponsor and started working the steps. And little by little, things started changing in my life. And that was the whole thing there. That's the word, change. You know, I went into one of them long-term programs there, and I had hair down the middle of my back and a big old beard. And they says, you've got that drug-type image. You know, you've got to, you know, change your image. So I cut my hair and I shaved my beard. And when I left that program, I went out and I fixed. So it didn't work. But what the change comes from within, you know. And that was what, you know, I could not grasp a hold of. See, I was a gutter hype and an alcoholic for a lot of years, and I adapted a way of living that was not really normal for this society. What I had to do was start growing and becoming a better person again. And I think Kevin describes it real well about the good and the evil, you know. And in order to not let the evil take part of your life, you have to start doing the good, you know. And that's what I had to start feeding. You know, the one that you feed the most is the one that's going to grow. And I think I had about 60 days sobriety, and I found a purse. And this purse had money in it, credit cards, checkbook, and all this other stuff. And for me, coming from where I came from, I could have ran a long time with it. And to make a long story short, I took the money and divided it with my partner at work. And then as the day rolled on, I didn't feel good. I started getting this feeling in my gut. And then my partner, you know, he's not doing too good either, you know. And finally I go, you know what, I can't keep this money, but now how am I going to tell him, you know, to turn the money in? He's going to think that I'm a wuss or something. But anyway, I said to myself, you know what, I'm here to change. You know, and if I'm going to make this program work, I've got to change. I've got to do something totally irregular against my grain. And so he came to the truck and jumped in, and I said, you know what, Mike, I don't feel good about this. And he says, I don't either, man. And so we took the money and we put it back in the purse, and I'm looking through the purse to find an address or a phone number or something to get a hold of this person. And here in between two pictures was a serenity prayer. And for me, that was a message from God telling me that I was on the right path. So, and since then, God, or whatever, has thrown little tests in my way. You know, I've found more purses and more wallets. and it's just like little tests. And then I had to deal with resentments because I felt that these people don't know who I am or where I came from. Don't you know I could have run amok with this shit? So I expected the pat on the back. So I had to deal with the first couple of times where's my reward for this shit, you know? And then I got over that real good. And the last time somebody did give me a reward, I found a cashier's check for $5,000 and all these credit cards and about $300 in cash. And the lady gave me a $100 reward, you know, and that made me feel good. So, you know, I'm not changed perfect, you know, I probably never will, but, you know, I'm rambling on, but the main thing is, you know, as I came into this program with a lot of doubts, I didn't think things would happen, and I didn't think you could have fun if you didn't take anything. And in my life, in the last 4.5 years, I'll be 5 in October, my life has been nothing but fun. It's been nothing but growth. You know, I'm a sober member and a positive member of society today. You know, I don't do jail no more except when I go in to chair a meeting there. You know, and I get to put a little visitor's patch in on my thing and walk in and tell the guys, you know, well, I'm going to go have milk and cookies and go make love to my wife. What are you doing tonight, right? But my life has changed. I got a little bit of responsibility. I've got a 16-month-old boy that I got as a gift of sobriety. You know, I've got a marriage that it's not all wonderful, but I'm trying. You know, I ain't given up. My motive before was, you know, when things hit the fan, to run amok. You know, see you later. Bye. You know, but we're working at it, and we're trying to make it work. You know, I've sat there and applied for a $180,000 loan, and I'm waiting to get an answer on that soon. I'm a junkie and a dope fiend and an alcoholic. I don't deserve this shit. But you know what? It's happening to me. My life has changed. And I owe it all to this program and sobriety. So if you're new here, welcome. And please come back. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Pablo Gomez, Jr. I'm an alcoholic.
I am Pablo.
Thank you. Love me. Take care of me. For you people that didn't hear that, she said, stand up, for God's sakes. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic. I'm an addict. I'm a Mexican. I'm a Toyota driver. I'm a chorizo eater. I'm all that stuff. I'm all that stuff. But the bottom line is, when none of that other stuff is there, I go directly to the 7-Eleven and get me something that makes me feel good. Because I'm restless and I'm irritable and I'm discontented, and I want to get that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once. At once, I believe the book talks about. By taking a few drinks, knew we were coming, okay, didn't say a drink, took a few. So I just wanted to cover in case there's some heroin addicts in here or some morphine users or some marijuana smokers, for God's sakes, Jesus. So now that that's cleaned up, I'm one of you, and you're one of me, and we're all in the same boat, so roll your ass off, okay? No problem. It's my job as a chairperson to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. Tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. Short and sweet. The first 11 years of my life, I was clean and sober. You guys laugh, and you gals laugh. That's a long time from some of the stories I've heard in here, okay? And then I turned 12 years old. When I was 12 years old, I found alcohol, tobacco, and sex. It was real nice being 12 years old. But the only problem with that is that I stayed 12 years old for the next 22 years of my life. Yeah. Bill was talking about doing some of that other stuff. I did some of that other stuff too, and I thought it was going to make me feel better. But I, too, came to in the morning, and I was still restless, irritable, and discontented, and I had a hangover, and it wasn't any nicer. So what happened with me? So when I was 12 years old, I graduated from grammar school, and I can remember walking to grammar school smoking cigarettes. I can remember going behind Moran's Liquor in the garage with the fellas working on the old car and having Mary Lou back there and doing what I had to do and thinking I was cool. And I thought, man, this life, this is good. Them grown-ups, they're not really too bad. I mean, look at, Jesus, there's some fun to have around here in life. Let's go. Let's keep going. Only problem is I kept falling down. I kept hurting myself and just didn't work out so good. So I went to junior high school and wore wedgies, and at that time it was cool to cut your belt loops off your Levi's. Couldn't wear Wranglers or anything else if you weren't cool, you know, and you had to be cool, okay? And rolled up the bottom of my pants and, you know, was cool and held the wall up. I've been holding the wall up for a lot of years. Holding the wall up in junior high school and having fun, having a good time, cutting school and thinking that I was hip, slick, and cool. So I made it through the 7th grade and made it through the 8th grade, and in the 9th grade, that's when you start to acquire credits. I didn't know nothing about any of that. So needless to say, I had to do the 9th grade over again. They didn't explain that to me. They said I had to show up for classes to get credit for it. So needless to say, I had to do the 9th grade over again. And all this time I'm not using yet. All this time I'm drinking and I'm falling into hedges, and girls' parents are asking them not to bring me home because I'm not acceptable. I'm not acting the way that young men should be acting in the neighborhood. I couldn't understand that. I was just having fun. So in the 9th grade, I did it over again, and I had to go out there. I had to get bused to school, okay? You got to remember, well, you don't know. So let me tell you where I came from. Mare Island Naval Shipyard in Vallejo, California, was down next to the water where they let ships float. And my dad was a man, he was a supervisor, he was a big-time guy. He worked at Maryland Shipyard, and we lived up on a hill. At that time, it was new homes and new development and things. So I lived up on the hill, okay? I was in an upper-middle class classification, if you classify. I don't, you know. So as time went on, I had to do the 9th grade over, and we were going through a change of time in our society, and I had to get bused to school. I said, Jesus, what is this all about? So I got bused to school, and I went out to school, and there was a lot of racial stuff happening, and, you know, I just liked people. I didn't know about, I'm supposed to not like you because of the color of your skin or the way that you talk or the way that you dress yourself and do all. I didn't know anything. So I did the 9th grade over again, and my big time riot was I was walking to gym class, and Jim Coleman, God bless him, he was going to crafts, and he said, Pablo, he said, Paul. Couldn't be Pablo and be hip, slick, and cool, so I was Paul all my years of growing up. So he said, Paul, he said, I've been elected to kick your ass. I said, well, hurry up, because I don't want to be late for class. So he hit me a couple of times, and I went to craft class, and he went to gym, and he said, I'll see you at lunch. I said, okay, bye. So that was that, you know. They had to come pick me up from my house for that? Jesus, what a waste of gas. So that was that. So I went to the 10th grade, and I made it through the 10th grade. I mean, they had to pass me. I got straight D's, for God's sakes. Nothing wrong with that. I didn't flunk. Jesus, lighten up. And then I wasn't going to go to college. Shit, I was trying to get through the 11th grade. So I made it to the 11th grade, and I took trade sheet metal. And so my morning consisted of 3 hours of sheet metal, because I was working for a sheet metal company. That neighbor at my house had a sheet metal company, so I'd go to work for him. So I took trade sheet metal because I knew what I was doing, and I'd hang out there for 3 hours. And then if I felt like it, I'd go to gym. If not, I'd go to first lunch. And then automatically, I'd go to second lunch because she was in second lunch. I don't know who she is, you know, but I ought to go to second lunch anyway. So I'd do that, and then I would go back to class and maybe hit an English class if I felt like it, and then I'd go home. So anyway, as time went on, I made it through the 11th grade. The reason I really do believe, oh God, the reason I made it through the 11th grade is because my shop teacher told me, he said, Bill Moffitt, God bless him, he says, Pablo, he says, you're pretty cocky. He says, why don't you get your little butt on the wrestling match? You'll see how tough you are. I said, look at Mr. Moffitt. I said, I'll go in there and kick ass for you. I said, but you got to make sure I get through government and history, dude. I said, I can't give it up for nothing, you know. And he said, all right, don't worry about it. And I remember, God, I remember one time going and talking to a history teacher or somebody, and Mr. Moffitt pleading to give me a C so that I can go wrestle at a tournament. And naturally, I got a C, and I went to the tournament and did what I had to do. So I made it through the 11th grade because I was captain of the wrestling team, and we can't kick him out of school, for God's sake. We can't give him a D. He really deserves an F, but he's showing up from time to time, so we'll give him a D. So I made it through the 11th grade, and I believe this. I didn't at the time, but more has been revealed, as they say, as time went on. I really believe this now that I think about it. If I'd have went back in my senior year and wrestled, I believe I would have graduated with my class in 66. But as it was, I didn't graduate until 84 or something. Lighten up! So, for you people that haven't done that yet, stay in the boat and keep rolling. You too can graduate from high school. Yeah, and, you know, it's okay. You know, yeah, that's okay. Yeah, I don't want to get ahead of myself, so. So what I did is, in my senior year, I went back to trace sheet metal. I had to do that. I had it, went back to double lunches, and I went on to Mare Island. I started boxing, because wrestling, I went undefeated, and I went to state, and everything was fine, and finally got beaten. So I lost my first match and my last two matches. The rest was undefeated, and I said, well, okay, I'm not going to get back into wrestling because I've kicked ass and it's no big deal, it's not a challenge anymore, and I'm tired of shaving my head and spitting to make weight, damn it, I want to eat some burritos, I want to, you know, and they, you know, so I said, okay, what I'm going to do in my senior year, they said, probably you're going to wrestle, I said, no, I'm going to gain weight. So what I did is I got into boxing, so I went over with Mr. Dunkel, God bless him, Maryland Naval Shipyard, and he was a coach of the 12th Naval District boxing squad. So what I did is I trained with him and I worked with him and I boxed a little for him, and I went around, I won the diamond belt, and then went over and I fought in the gloves, and I lost the finals at the gloves in 66. And so needless to say, I didn't go back to school. So needless to say, I didn't graduate. So when the ceremonies for graduation was happening, I was hip slick and cool driving down the street in my 58 Chevrolet, drinking, and she was in the car, and you know, she is, yeah, right. And we were having a good time, and I said, Jesus, just think of all them squares and them lops and them punks and them sissies, and they're in there in them funny looking gowns, and mom and dad and grandma's up there applauding, and Jesus, let's go party. So I went and got into oblivion, I'm sure, and did what I had to do. And I'm sure at that time, I didn't realize it at the time because I thought that I was having fun, but all that time what I was doing is I was stuffing all these feelings, because deep down inside of me, I wasn't very pleased with Pablo, because, Jesus, they're graduating and I should be graduating, and what the hell's the matter with me? And I didn't want to look at me and see that I was doing the things that people should not be doing to get to where they are. I didn't deserve it. Shit, when I didn't go to school, I didn't deserve to get a D. I mean, they would have passed me, but I didn't deserve it, you know? So I didn't realize that at the time. I just said, yeah, I'm cool, give me another one, and just got on with my life, you know? So as time went on, she became pregnant. You know who she is. She became pregnant. We got married. Had the meeting of the family. We got in her dad's Cadillac and went to Reno. And yeah, I do. Okay, bye. And we went back and we moved in with her parents. I mean, I didn't want to take her out of her environment, for God's sake. I'm a thoughtful person. Lighten up, okay? I was thinking of others, as they say, okay? And besides that, the pool hall was just about a quarter of a mile away. I could walk to work. Jesus. So as time went on, I walked to work. I'd made $4 and come back loaded and say, here, honey, aren't you glad of me? Aren't you proud of me and happy that I'm not drinking and wrecking cars and stuff? So yeah. So as time went on, early in our marriage, I had a 56... Chevrolet, naturally. I had a 56, and I came around the corner. I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but one of those parked cars jumped out and hit me. So the natural thing for me to do was just wait for them to give me a ride. Shit, I couldn't walk, right? Right. So I went to jail, and now you got to remember, I was working for the city of Vallejo. I came home with $4 one day. She said, why don't you get a real job? Jesus. So I went out to the city of Atlanta. I bugged this lady so much, and she said, "Jesus, come back Wednesday. I'll give you a job." So I went back Wednesday, and I was working with them, with the city of Atlanta. So I was working, and I crashed this car, and when the police came, they took me to the police department. I knew the policeman by name because I worked in the corporation yard with them, and I had some friends there, and I used to coach boxing for the PAL, Police Activities League, yeah. And so I was networking, if you will. Big words, huh? So I was getting familiar with it, so they knew me. So they just, what they did is they charged me with reckless driving or something. But anyway, my wife came and got me at 6 o'clock in the morning, the earliest kickout, so I spent a couple of few hours in jail, you know. And on the way home, she says, "You want to go to something to eat?" I said, "I want something to drink, for God's sakes. I don't feel good." So that went on, and finally we moved to... I finally got a job and saved $14 and made enough money to go rent a house. So we went out and we rented a little house. We weren't big people. We didn't need a big house, okay? That always gets them to chuckle. So as time goes on, my daughter was born December 24, 1966. Stoned fox now. And so, true story, I wouldn't lie to you, Jesus. You know. So my daughter was born and... we moved from that little house because we were a big family. Ha ha. We moved from that little house and we moved out to a big 3-bedroom house that our parents had just bought another house. And we moved in there and we stayed there. And I'm finally 21 years old. Maybe by now I'm finally 21 years old. I'm legal. Lighten up. And my first experience with drugs. Ooh. My first experience with drugs. Let me do this. Drugs. Alcohol is a drug. Alcohol is the oldest known drug to mankind. Cavemen were doing drugs. True story. We got time for a story? Yeah, we got time for a story. Man was, back in that day, in those days, they didn't have pistols and butchers to where they could shoot them and skin them, okay? So what happened is the caveman, he went out and he picked him a few grapes one day. So he'd get him something to eat. So he went back to his cave and he was eating his grapes, having a good time. And a pig ran by. And he went, "Barbecue." So what happened was, by the time he went, now he just dropped his grapes and took out, grabbed his sticks and rocks and jammed, okay? So by the time he finally ran this pig down and killed him and did what he had to do and drug him back to the cave, a few days had passed, okay? And he said, "Boy," he said, "I'm going to enjoy them grapes now." So he went back and his grapes had turned into this hideous, smelling ugly juice. He went, "Oh, yuck." He said, "Well," he said, "I got to get something." So he reached down and got him a handful and drank some. He said, "Forget that pig. Give me some grapes." Alcohol has been around a long time, okay? Now, I don't want to offend anybody or chase anybody away, and I'm sorry to keep harping on it, but don't forget, alcohol is a drug, okay? I don't want to argue. I don't want to fight. I don't want to debate. I don't want to do anything. I'm here. You're there. The fact is, alcohol is a drug. Okay? So, as time went on, my brother, first time I smoked any herb, if you will, I can remember my brother taking me, we're at a party at Jimmy Williams' house, God bless him. And he was one of the big kids. And my brother said, "Come on, let's go." I went, "Yeah, okay." So I just went, you know, and we went out in front of Robert Duncan's house. God bless him, he's no longer with us. And Robert ran in the house and came out the side door and said, "Yeah, man, here it is. What's happening?" I went, "Hey, what's going on here, man? Don't mess around, man. Don't play games, dude." And he whipped out this thing and he lit it up. He passed it to my brother. My brother, and he handed it to me. And I went, "Jesus, what do I do?" I took a hit or two off and went, "Woo!" Forget that party. Yeah, and that was my start. And I was probably 18, 19 years old. And I've been going ever since until I finally surrendered and got into this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that was my start at 19 years old. So we got into this other house. My daughter was born, and I went to work, and I came home. I gave her $14 for a couple of weeks' pay, and I'd go out with the fellas. And one day I came home, and she says, I said, "Look, kid," I said, I gotta change. I gotta go with the fellas because Jesus, it's happy hour at Flamingo Joe's. Drinks are only a quarter, and they have topless dancers. And I gotta go with the men because I wanna have some fun. Jesus, I don't wanna be here with you and the kid. Jesus, you know. She said, "Oh, Pablo." She says, "I'm not too sure I want to be married to you." I said, "Well, you think about it, but I gotta go. Bye." So I don't want you to think that I stayed away for a couple of days. You know, I came back, but a couple of weeks had passed, and I was passing through, changing my clothes, and heading out. And she said, "Pablo," she says, "remember what we were talking about the other day?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "What'd you think about it?" I said, "What do you want to do? You want to stay married? You want to separate? Come on, hurry up, because I gotta go. The fellas are waiting." And she says, "Pablo," she says, "I just went to the doctor, and I'm pregnant." "Oh, no, how'd that happen? Jesus. I'm not home very often, or when I am, I can't talk." So I said, "Okay, Juanita," God bless her. I said, "Okay, Juanita," I said, "what do you want to do?" I don't know where this came from, because from my heritage and my background, I don't know where it came from, but I remember it. I said, "What do you want to do? You want to have an abortion, or do you want to have my son?" I don't know where that came from. And I said, "What do you want to do?" She says, "I think I want to have your baby." I said, "Great." I said, "You'll have a boy. Don't talk about a girl, because I'm a man, and I'm the last man in the family. I need a boy to carry my name on." I got something to do with it. You know, I did, but my stuff was done. Jesus, you know. So she says, "Okay." She says, "I'll tell you what, Papa." She says, "We'll stay married for until I go and have your son at the hospital, and then when I come home, you'll be gone." I said, "Great." I said, "When you get home," I said, "I have a new lawn planter for you, and I'll be gone. I'll take the tortillas and the $4 in the cookie jar, and I'll be gone. And you can stay here because it's poor Pablo. I have to go live in the world by myself. And you got mom in the house and everybody, and you got a connection, and people love you. And God, poor Pablo, what's going to happen? And happy hour is only for 2 hours. And oh, my God." So my son was born January the 8th, 1981. Who has since made me a grandfather, Kayla Francis, who is now 3 years old and another fox. I can't lie about that, okay? Jesus. So in 1981, my son was born. Thank you. 1971. They're on me, boy. They don't let me get away with nothing. I'm glad somebody's looking over me. So my son was born in 71, and I moved out. I planted a lawn and grabbed the 14 tortillas and the $1.50, and I was gone. Jesus. So I went and I rented a little house. I've always been a little house. I rented a little house in the alley, and I grew accustomed to that living. By that time, I'd come accustomed to that kind of lifestyle. So I lived in the alley, and I bought a 1971 Super Beetle, because all hip, slick, cool dudes ought to have a Super Beetle, you know. So I bought one, and I was doing some things out of my house, which is against the law, which we don't talk about here, but doing some things that was not legal. We'll leave it at that. And had a lot of traffic in and out. And as time went on, I was doing real good. Car payments were ahead of time. Things were working real nice. Shit, I had $14 in my pocket. Rent was paid. Shit, it was fine. It was good. I had a job, for God's sakes. So as time went on, this is all hearsay because I don't remember. But from what I can piece together, from the stories I get, I was at a little dive, bar, restaurant, tavern, you know. It was a dive. Flipped hamburgers, okay. Had shuffleboard and pool tables and all that stuff. So I went in there and I was on the way home, I'm sure. Now you got to remember, I could go a mile to my mother's house, and she could call work in the morning and tell them that poor little Polly is sick, okay, and they'd go for that, okay. Or I could try to drive home and try to get up in the morning and try to make it to work. Trick that, I would go to mom's, right? Right. So on the way to mom's, I had to go down the highway, and apparently, after I saw the car, what I did is I pulled out on Highway 37, I pulled out in front of an oncoming car. And it hit me and it threw me down the road 18 miles and threw me in a ditch and turned me over 77. Yeah, I don't know what happened, you know. I turned in front of a car and it hit me. It sideswiped me. That was a time, I didn't know it at the time, but that was a time that God was working in my life because I didn't have a passenger. Because it took the passenger door and brought it over to me and threw me down the road a little bit. God worked in my life. I didn't acknowledge it until many years later because I was in a little bit of denial. Just a little. Lighten up now, okay? So after that, I went and did my jail time and paid my fine, and my father-in-law was at the hospital. Yeah, my whole family was at the hospital because they thought that I was going to die. I had to learn how to walk, talk, and eat again. And I'm still in the practice mode of it, and we're doing fine, so it's okay. So what happened is I got out of there. I had to go to court. My father-in-law at the time, he went up and he paid the fine, and my brother was there. My brother took me to Chico where I could get some R&R and just relax. I needed it, you know, and so I went up to Chico, and I didn't drink a whole lot. I did some of that other stuff. By this time, I'm doing more than smoking, other things. Thank you. Things that affect me from the neck up. Okay. Not sober. So I'm doing all that, and I'm trying to learn how to walk, talk, and eat again. I don't know how to spell my name. I don't know what my birthday is, but things are getting better, you know. So what happened is I went up there, I said, well, geez, if I'm going to start over, I might as well go by my birth-given name. So I changed my name to Pablo, which is my birth-given name. You know, it's on my birth certificate, at least, you know. So I got to believe that. So I changed my name to Pablo Gomez Jr., which is my name, and that's what I've been going by ever since. And that, you know, I don't know. But, yeah, that's my birth-given name. So I try to go back to Vallejo. I'm working for the city of Vallejo, and, you know, I try to go back with the city of Vallejo and go to work. Now, you got to remember, I don't know my birthday. I'm driving. Having trouble trying to spell my new name. I'm trying to remember where I live. I'm trying. You know, I'm real sick. I'm still sick. So a year, well, in that aspect, I didn't know I was sick with this disease at that time because I was into denial. So what happened is, as time went on, I tried to get back with the city of Vallejo. They said, no, Pablo, you're a liability. You don't know nothing. You might get lost and we'd have to come find you. So we can't. We're just not going to put you back to work. I said, well, that's okay. I said, I'll retire. Shit, I'm 28 years old. I need to retire. So I got my retirement money out. You know, I had a few $1,000s. So I got my retirement money. I paid off some of my bills. Jesus, I didn't want to be clean, all right? Paid off some of my bills, put a lot of money in my pocket, and moved to Chico. In Chico, I lived. You got to imagine, I was born and raised in this house up on the hill in the upper middle class. By this time, in the 70s, mid-70s, I'm living in an orchard in a little cap in a little three-unit building with a big, nice house next to it in a room about the size of this wall to that wall from pole to pole, and had a water bed down there, had an ice box here, had a table here, and had a stove here, and a door here. Shit, I was set up. I had everything I needed. Gee, you know, it wasn't any big deal. I started living there. And as time went on, I was riding my bike and getting around, and things were going good. And what year is it? It's 75. And I'm thinking, well, Jesus, I'm doing good, man. I'm not tripping. I'm doing okay. I can do a little herbs, and I don't get in trouble. I can do a little powder, and I'm not getting in trouble. I can do some other things. I'm not getting in trouble. I'm controlling it. Things are okay. I can drink a little bit, and it's okay, and everything's fine. And look at this. The state sends me a letter saying, Pablo, it's okay. Time has passed to where you can come get your license if you want. I went, yeah. They see that I'm getting better. Jesus, I might as well go get my license. Jesus. I mean, the state's looking out and telling me that it's okay. It must be okay, right? Right. So I went and I did all the paperwork and got the insurance to get my license back and went down to my Uncle Charlie's house in Vallejo. Hurts me to tell you this part of the story. But he bought me $300. Jesus. A 1956 Chevrolet 2-door hardtop, automatic, padded dash. Oh, yeah, he bought it from the original owner, just put a new motor in it. Nice car. Not yet, hurts. I wish I had it now. But that's okay. I couldn't hold on to things. So I went down, I picked it up, and I drove home back to Chico, and I parked it in the orchard and hung out, and it was real nice, you know. One of the guys that lived in this complex, in this three-unit converted barn, would you say that's what it was? Something looked like a barn with a skylight in it, okay? One of these guys, don't mean to offend anybody, okay? Please. So we were doing some drugs, excuse me, and we were doing some things that were illegal, and one day I came home and he said, Pablo, he said, can I take a picture of you? He said, I want to show it to my friend and see if he knows you. I said, Jesus, sick, 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 sick. But I said, yeah, go ahead, you know. Who's sick? Yeah. So I posed, and he took my picture. The next day I came out and there was posters everywhere. And it says, don't, narcotics agent. Said this guy is hip, slick, and cool, and hangs out in Hyde Park and acts hip, slick, and cool, but be careful, he is the man. So, and then he gave me a history of what I was supposedly supposed to have done. Relax, I'm not the man, okay? And so as time went on, I ripped down a few posters and went out and did what I had to do and came home and kicked the shit out of him and drove him out of town. And, well, he didn't come home on a regular basis. I don't know what it was. Anyway, went and got a hold of a lawyer friend and started a process on him to sue him for $200,000. Before you ladies get up and come jam me, I didn't get any money, okay? I just ran him out of town, okay? So as time went on, I was feeling bad for poor Pablo. You know, Jesus, I'm going to lose some of my friends. You know, geez, they think I'm a narcotics agent, for God's sakes. I don't even know how to spell the word, Jesus. Oh. So I went down to Canal Street where I used to hang out, and I was drinking some hooch and running out back and making sure the grass was still green. Thank you. And going back inside and drinking and going outside and making sure the porch light worked and everything and doing what I had to do. And this guy came in, and he was sitting a few tables away from me. He says, yeah, he said, don't do nothing with that guy. That guy's a narc, and he'll bust you. And yeah, he's cool, but yeah, he's a narc, and be careful. So I drank enough and smoked enough and rubbed enough and snorted enough and did enough. And I just went in, I finished my beer, and I went over to the table, and I grabbed his pitcher of beer, and I poured it on him. And I told him, if you attempt to get up, I'm going to break your face. That's another time, well, that God was working in my life. I mean, God's worked in my life all the time, but that was a big time that I remember. Because if he would have stood up, I'd have smacked him with that pitcher. I'd have smacked him in his head. Because I was loaded enough and drunk enough to do that. Luckily, he didn't move. And I, you know, by this time, and this is my hangout, okay? And I have friends from Vallejo that were working up there. So they, Jeff came up from behind the bar, and Chris came out, and they came out and said, Pablo, I'm going to arrest you, and then we got to raise bond to get you out. Pablo, don't do that. I said, I'm not going to do anything. Let's just punk moves. He says, oh, I'm not going nowhere. So I said, okay, and I turned around to leave, and I turned around, and I said, well, Paul, the least you could do is offer him a beer. So I turned around, and I offered to buy him a beer, and he said, no. I couldn't understand that. I was trying to be friendly. So I went back to the table, and I finished doing what I was doing, and I went out, and I got in that 56 that I was talking about. And I went down one of the main streets. I mean, it was lit up. There was a jack-in-the-box, for God's sakes. There was a post office. And one of those parked cars jumped out and hit me. Jesus. They were after me is what they were. They were after me. So I was a block and a half away from jail. Shit, I could have walked. But they came pick me up. I guess they didn't want me to hurt myself. And I didn't find this out until years later, that what happened is that I was getting busted on the street. And some friends of my family came by and saw me getting busted, and they went home and they told my brother. My brother was at the police department by the time I went there to get me out. And I thought that I'd gotten out on my own, or I'd call my brother and done. My brother was there waiting for me when I went to jail. He said, well, yeah, here's some money. I had some money. We got out. He took me home, or on the way home, he said, Pablo, he said, do you want to go home and talk about it? He said, you want to drink some coffee? I said, no. He said, I feel bad. That was the first time I really felt bad, okay, about what I was doing and where I was at and where I was headed. I felt real bad. I said, take me home. I said, I don't want anything to do with anybody. I want to close myself. Take me home. Leave me alone. So he took me home and he said, Pablo, don't hurt yourself. He said, don't do anything that'll hurt yourself. You know, he said, just take it easy, Pablo. And I had enough alcohol and enough of that other stuff to sustain me for a few days. So what I did is I stayed inside for a few days. Then I got onto my bike and I rode out to the ranch. I was a top bracero of an almond ranch. So I went out to make sure the braceros were bracero and making sure the almond trees were all right. And so I went out and I did that and I took care of that, and then I had to go to court. So the judge said, he said, Pablo, he said, this is your second 502 within 5 years. I said, it's been 4 years, 9 months, and 18 days. He says, it doesn't count. He says, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. He says, I'm going to fine you $1,000. I said, well, shit, I'll pay you $1 a week. That'll be all right. He says, I'm going to send you to jail for 90 days. I said, well, it's in the winter. I said, I can't get a suntan, no big deal, I'll go do that. He says, then you got to go to A&A. And I went, oh no, not me. Can I do some more time or pay you some more money? He put the gavel down and said, get in the car. So I went to jail. So as soon as I went to jail, I just went in and I told him, hey, look it, don't put me in there with them wife beaters and them bank robbers and stuff. Put me in with the drunks. I said, that's all I am. I said, I rake leaves real good, I do dishes. I said, make me a trustee and give me some good time. So that's exactly what they did. Is they gave me some good time and put me in with the trustees. It was fine. I became one of Santa's little helpers. Little Eve. Eve, no, elves, little elves. The first Mexican elf in Butte County, for God's sake. So I did that and got my good time. And I got out of jail. And while I was in jail, cute little story. Arrogant, arrogant, arrogant. Sick, sick, sick. I went to jail and I had just purchased a new leather coat when I got arrested. So I wanted to go before the judge looking good, right? Right. So when I went to jail and I got out of jail, they gave me my duds, but they didn't have my leather coat. I said, I'm not leaving until you give me my coat or reimburse me. They said, Pablo, the bus is going to leave and you're going to have to walk to Chico. I said, I don't care. I'm not leaving until I get my coat. Said, we don't have no coat. Their boss man came. I told him, look it. I had a coat when I came in here. I'm not leaving until I get a coat. He says, okay, go down to the store where the county has an account and get you a new coat. And we'll take care of it and that'll be all right. I went down and got me two coats. I mean, what the hell? They were buying, right? Right. So after I did that, I got out of jail and I went to them silly A&A meetings. I went and listened to them old people. Jesus, they were 40 years old, for God's sake. And I went and listened to them. They were squares and lops. They were wearing socks and they were fully clothed and they were talking and they were in their right minds. And shit, they even had driver's license, for God's sakes. So while I was in jail, H&I came in, hospitals and institutions. If you're looking for something to get into service with, that's a nice avenue to go. So I went into jail. When H&I came in, I went and listened to you squares and lops talk about that square stuff. And I said, yeah, if I was as old as you, I'd quit too. And if I was as bad as you, I'd quit too. And look at you, boy, you better be glad you quit. Look at you. Said, but not me. Said, I'm hip, I'm slick, I'm cool, I'm what's happening, let me go. Geez, you go do that. Punk guy, not me. I got up and I went back to my cell. They got in the car and drove off. Sick, sick, sick thinking. So I got out and I went 22nd Street in Chico, California. I went to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I went back to the judge and I said, yes, sir, yes, sir. He said, you ought to stay there. Yes, sir, yeah. And they're good people. Yes, sir, yeah. Okay, bye, yeah. Bye. And I left and I went out and I told this foxy young lady, I don't know who she was, just sounds good, okay? And I told her, yeah, I'm here to make my first dollar installment. She went back, she looked, and she said, I don't have any record. She says, I see that you had to go to them silly A&A meetings, and I see that you had to do 90 days in jail, but I don't have any record of you owning $1,000 fine. I said, oh, must have been my cleaning bill. Gotta go, bye. And I left. That was another time God was working in my life. I left there, and that was in 1975. So the seed was planted in 1975. If you're a newcomer here, you should not say that it's Alcoholics Anonymous and their program and what they're doing that you can't get recovery, because recovery is here if you want it. All you got to do is level your pride, surrender, and get your ass in the middle of the steps, because there ain't nothing wrong with your feet, dude. Jump in here with your head and do that, excuse me, and get in the program and do what it suggests in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't want to get into that, because I talk all night about the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. Follow the directions of the steps, get a sponsor, go to meetings, and discover life, man, and get on with it, okay? So in 1975, it was introduced. I did not do anything with the program. She came in the store and bought a bottle of Blue Nun. I don't know. I'm working in Chico, a college town. She was a college lady, a big time. Anyway, she came in and bought a bottle of Blue Nun, and she was paying for it. I worked at a little grocery store in the neighborhood. Neighborhood doesn't have any street lights and doesn't have any sidewalks, so it tells you where my neighborhood was, okay? So she came in, and I held her hand with one hand and took her money with the other and did this and did that and said, look here, Mama. If you leave here and you go out here and go down to the first street, make a left and go straight, I said, you'll run right into my house. I said, come see me. We can have some fun. She said, oh, you're so cute. Ha. And she left. 2 days later, I found a note on my door. So she came and she picked me up, took me to dinner, took me to a play at the theater at Chico State, cooked me dinner, shit, drove a car. Ooh, I like this girl. So we went, and you know, at this time I'm doing some of that other stuff too, and I'm drinking, and she didn't do a whole lot of it. So we went to the theater, and on the way home I said, well, why don't we stop at a for a nightcap? So I took her to this establishment, and we did a little bit, and some friends came by and took me out back to make sure that I knew that there was a new light bulb out there and do what I had to do, and came. And she took me home, and on the way home I was thinking, boy, this is a real nice night, huh? She took me home and she kissed me and went, woo, Pablo, you like that girl. So 3 weeks later she moved in. I mean, it was okay, no problem, okay? I had to have somebody to help me take care of that large suite, okay? So she moved in, and she went to school. She graduated. She went to ceremonies and did all that. Her family came up, and she went to work in another school district down Marysville, down a little ways from Chico, and she came back from weekends. And it was sort of kind of all right, and she got a job over in Fort Bragg, and naturally, we weren't married at the time, and I said, Jesus, it's getting close to her leaving. I hope she asked me in a hurry. So she finally asked me, I got my stuff in the car, and we left. The weekend before we left, one of her friends got married, and we went to her wedding, and I was so loaded, and before, on the way home, I told her to stop and get me a beer. Jeez, I couldn't walk. And she gave me $50 that morning, so I had some money in my pocket, okay? Arrogant. I told her, before I got out of the car, I said, give me some money. She said, Pablo, I gave you some. I said, give me some money. So she gave me some money. She didn't want to fight. I went inside, I got a beer, and I came out and I said, listen, I don't like the way you act. Say, I'm going to go home. You go home by yourself. I'll see you later. I didn't find out until years later that she went home and at her friend's house had just gotten married. She parked in an alley and slept in her car all night. You got to remember, we're going to move to Fort Bragg in the morning. And I just went home and I said, boy, I hope she comes by in the morning. She got all my stuff. She did. She came by, picked me up. We went to Fort Bragg. One day we're brushing our teeth or something. I said, listen, Patricia, not now. I said, but when you're ready and you want to get married, I said, ask me first. Ha, ha, ha. She said, you're so cute. I said, yeah. We went to Fort Bragg and we were brushing our teeth one day. She said, Pablo, remember when we were brushing our teeth in Yuba City? I said, yeah. She said, get in the car. I said, Jesus. So we went to Reno. We got married. We came back. The reason was, I found out later, is why she wanted to marry is so that I was covered on the insurance. I mean, an enabler, taking care of poor Pablo because I needed to be taken care of, okay? Lovely woman, take care of me. So we got married, and that lasted a little while, and she said, Pablo, she says, you ought to go back to those meetings. She says, you're so much easier to get along with, you know, and you're not, just go back to the meetings, you know. So I went back to the meetings, sort of, kind of, and I never bought a book. Spend $5.25 for a book? Forget that, man. I got things to do. So I, whenever I want to get in good graces, I'd go to a meeting. And finally, on March the 6th of 1981, I was helping a friend dig a ditch, build a fence, or do something. And his wife, it's late. It's 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning. His wife said, Pablo, want a beer? I went, nah. Said, I've been sober 18 days now. I got it made. I don't want it. Nah, it's okay. Thank you. So I went back to digging a ditch or building a fence or whatever and went, Jesus, Gomez. Look at punk. You've been working out here for 18 minutes, man. Say, you got boots on. The sun's out. Look at you, punk. You got gloves on. Go get the beer. You've earned it. That's right. So I followed directions, right? Right. So I went back in the house. I said, yeah, Deanna. I said, I'll have that beer now. I remember it. It was a Miller in a glass, one of those 8-ounce, nice, drop dripping like Billy talked about bottles. We understand that. It was wonderful. So I took a drink of that. When I took a drink of it, not everything, but a lot of what you people have been saying about, I was powerless, my life was unmanageable, I was aimlessly going nowhere, all that flashed in front of me, and I went, Jesus, that's right, I am powerless. So I finished the beer. I mean, good drunk I am. I finished the beer. And I went out and picked up my gloves and my shovel. And I threw them in my 49 Chevrolet. And I went home and I told her, get out of the bedroom. Leave me alone. I wanted to be alone. My thinking at that time was that I could not surrender to God with beer on my breath. That's what worked for me, okay? So I waited till the next day. On March the 7th of 1981, I went out in front of God and the neighbors. 7 o'clock in the morning. And I fell on my knees and I said, God, help. Said, I'm your kid, take care of me. I can't seem to do it. Help me. I'm your kid, take care of me. And I heard, get a book. I took it to mean the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, for you newcomers, if you don't have a Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, don't leave this room tonight. Do we have Big Books?
Yeah.
If you do not leave this room, if you do not have a Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, do not leave this room without a Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. Make a deal. I know you know how to make deals, okay? Make a deal with the secretary, and I'll bet you, if you give him a quarter, he'll make you a little payment plan that every time that you show up, you give him a quarter until you pay it off. If nothing else, dude, and do that, you will come back until you pay off that $5. And it might be a few times that you have to come back with a quarter and a half, but you will be here. And here is where the message is carried that we win at life, okay? Here is where the solution is talked about. Here is where we become God's people that walk on our own two feet. We become part of society. We become, excuse me, nothing personal. This is where I become a Scornilapa, a tax-paying citizen with the license, got a license, and I'm happily married, go to a job, people invite me inside their house more than once. Okay? The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is contained in the first 164 pages of the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. Design for Living is in there. If you have any problems with that Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, come see me. I'll help you. And if I can't find the answer, I'll go to my sponsor. And if he can't find the answer, he'll go to his sponsor. And if he can't find the answer, I'll go to Joe McQueenie in Arkansas. And if he can't find it, I'll go to Keith Drum, and he'll find it. If he can't find it, I'll go to Charlie Palmer. If he can't find it, I'll go somewhere and I'll find the answer, because the answer's in the book. Okay? There's a lot of people that pay a lot of money to do that other stuff. I don't have anything wrong with that. I don't have anything to do with that. I ain't got nothing to say about that. But for me, the program Alcoholics Anonymous tells me what I have to do in life to become happy, joyous, and free one day at a time and be a part of the human race, for God's sake. And I'm just cruising, just having a good time, and it's no big deal. The book talks about being granted a gift unwarranted. Unwarranted means to me that I haven't earned it. I ain't got it coming. If I was to get what I got coming, I would not be alive today. In a conversation, no doubt. Okay? I can't speak for you, but I'm sure somebody, at least one of the other people, I can use this, Billy. Okay? I'm sure, okay? You understand what I'm saying? From where we came to where we're at now, we have been given a gift unwarranted from our past behavior, because we're here. We are in the hands of God, and God loves us, okay? From March 7th, 1981 until today, I've been a student of the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. It has saved my life. It has given me a life which is something that I would never have dreamt of, okay? My brother talked about going down and signing papers for $182,000, for $17 million, for whatever it was, okay? My wife and I, and I'm happily married again for the third time, and it's going to work this time, because it's going to work today, because see, today, I see with a new pair of glasses. Chuck C., God bless you. I see with new pair. I've dropped I've dropped the blinders, and the world is here, and I'm willing to do what's in front of me, and man, I've been given a gift that's wonderful. And today, life is real good. I lost where I was at. I can tell you today that the program Alcoholics Anonymous will save your life if you're looking for recovery. Just do what's in front of you, and life will get better. I have since paid for that Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous that I got more than once. And I repeat, if you haven't got a book, don't leave this room tonight without a book, because it'll save your life. I don't know if I have any books with me. I don't think I do, but I'm sure we can work something out. It's not a problem. The best day of my life has not happened yet, okay? What you people have promised me is that, what you people have told me is that what I get to do today is I get to learn the betterment of life today and make today better, so that my life tomorrow is automatically going to be better, because what you teach me today is much better than I had yesterday, and what I get to do tomorrow if I wake up, thank God, please. If I wake up tomorrow, what I get to do is I get to use everything that you taught me today, which I get to use tomorrow, and today's been a killer, which automatically is going to make tomorrow better, and so I got to be better, and it's got to get better, and it's going to be okay, and I'm the best me I've ever been, and I'm not the best yet. Jesus, I don't know a better deal in town. All I know is that if I bring the body, the head follows. I brought the body in 1979 with a stinking piece of paper that said, have this signed for 90 meetings. And my head caught up 6 years later. My head caught up. And I went down. I got a big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And my life has been yippee since. I have been rocketed. I have been rocketed into that fourth dimension. I got 3 minutes, okay? 1, 2, and 3, I think, is the foundation. Any building that's going to stand has to have a good foundation. I think 1, 2, and 3, 1 is powerlessness, 2 is a solution, 3 is a turning point. I surrender, I turn my will and my life over to care, God, as I understand him. 8'7" Mexican, that's right, works for me. That's right. I think that's the first dimension, okay? I think 4, 5, 6, and 7 is the second dimension. I think that's self. I take an inventory, I share it. Bill talked about doing bad to doing good. He's doing better now than he did before. I believe that that works in my character defects. I was resentful, fearful, and lustful. If I just don't do those half of the time, I become more loving, tolerant, and patient, which is step 7, okay? Because my shortcomings become longer. I become more loving, tolerant, and patient. I think that's the second dimension. I think that's self. So I got foundation with God. I'm self. I'm here. I'm present while here. I'm clean, okay? So 8 and 9, I think, is others. I take care of others. I make a list. I got into step 4. And in 9, I become willing to make amends. Amends means to make right. If I broke the window, pay for the window in the conversation. That's right.
Well, I told him I was sorry, but I still owe him $9,000.
Amends means to make right. So make it right. Pay him back his $4,000. Whatever. Pay it back, okay? I think that's the third dimension. I think that's other. The book talks about being rocketed. Rocketed? Haul ass, right? Talks about being rocketed into a fourth dimension, okay? To me, that means step 10, 11, and 12. 10, I get to take a daily inventory, if I can regress for a minute. In step 4, when I got here, I had a big bag of caca. 22 years of caca, okay? What I got to do in step 4 and 5 was take care of that big bag of caca. So now it's clean. So now that I get up to step 10, what I get to do is I get to take a daily inventory to see if I've got any of these little bags of caca that I can take care of. That's right, so that I don't get another big bag of caca, okay? And in step 11, what I get to do is I get to seek to get closer to God, okay? Get connected, okay? That's what I seek to get closer to God. And step 12 is carry the message. For me to walk down the streets of Vallejo, California, my hometown, clean and sober, going to an A&A meeting, being a service, fully clothed, not handcuffed, not carrying a gun, not getting out of a wrecked car. Woo, are you sure you're Pablo? Let me call the police. I mean, what I can do is I can be an example. So the best thing that I can do by carrying this message is just when Alcoholics Anonymous asks me to do something, I say yes. And then I look in my calendar, and if the date's open, we do it. If not, we just make it for another date. And what I get for all of that little bit of work that I do, what I get here is I get an abundance of life. We just got a new car. We're just put in for another loan. We just got it. Excuse me. I got to share this because they'll call me on it. From my past, my credit is not too wonderful. So they told my wife, Cole, tough, poor Pablo. They told my wife, they said, if you get him off the contract, Mama, we'll give you the money. So I said, honey, I'll give you a ride to the bank. And you know what? I did not react to that. I did not tip any desk over. I did not go blow cars up. I did not go throw rocks to the window. I did not go take my $14 out of the bank. I did not react to that. I just said, thank you, no problem. The solution is have Mama do it. Because the bottom line is, if Mama's got it, I got it. See, because in our household, I don't got mine and she's got hers, we got ours. And see, because you people taught me that, I don't have mine here. I got what you gave me. And because you gave it to me, I got it. And I got it all. And if you want any of it, come ask me. I'll show you where it's at in the book. And if we can't find the book, we'll find it somewhere. But it's here. So what I do on a daily basis is I work step 1, 2, and 3. I surrender. Okay? I get out of the way. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 is all this dirty stuff that I've taken care of, and I work 10, 11, 12 on a daily basis. So I work steps 1, 2, and 3, 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis, and man, life is so good. I'm just real, real glad that it's legal. Man, I got money in my pocket. I got money in my bag, excuse me. I got money in the bank. Mama just got a whole bunch of money. We're trying to buy a house also. Life is good. And if I can be of service to any and all of you, all you got to do is ask me, and if I'll say yeah, and then we'll look at my calendar if it works. Surrender, get out of the way, do what's in front of you. And we are like Clancy talks about, 85 convention. Yeah. What we have here is we are like in an invisible boat. What we have to do is we have to have faith, and we have to get in the boat. We're all like in this liner, this big cruiser. What's happening is we're having fun. We're doing what we got to do. We're drinking. We're using. We're having fun. But what happens is I sort of kind of get sick from time to time. So I go over to the side and I do what I have to do because I'm ill. And I hear this little voice, surrender, get in the boat. What the hell's going on? I'm having fun. I want to go party. So I go back and I do some more of that stuff. And I go to the edge of the boat again. I do what I have to do. And I hear this little boat, surrender. Said, there ain't no boat down there. There ain't nobody. Have faith. Surrender. Get in the boat. The amazing thing that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous, if I got faith enough to get off that line cruiser and quit having fun, and I get into this invisible boat, and I just start rolling with an invisible oar, and I just have faith, and I just keep taking the action, showing up, being a service, reading the book, chairing meetings, so on and so forth, okay? And I just keep being a service, and I keep rolling. Eventually what happens is that the oar and the boat appear. And what happens is that now that we're here and we're all in the same boat, I didn't know this for about 3 years until my wife told me, Pablo, you know what's happening? Is that we're all rowing the same way. We're not going in circles. Jesus! So the amazing thing that's happening is that we just have faith and we get in the boat and we do the footwork and we keep rowing. The boat appears and we're here and we got lots of suntan lotion, we got lots of burritos, and let's party and have a good time. Thank you.